While a wastewater testing pilot program is being trialled around New Zealand by the ESR to detect COVID-19 in the community, two expatriate New Zealanders are testing sewage for COVID-19 in Arizona. Molecular virologist Arvind Vasani heads his own research lab at Arizona State University, and Simona Kraberger, who completed her PhD in molecular microbiology under the supervision of Arvind at the University of Canterbury, is also at Arizona State University working in Arvind's lab. And they're both with us now. Hello.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Testing sewage doesn't sound much fun. Can you tell me exactly what you're doing, Arvind? What are you doing at your lab?
So we're basically trying to determine what type of viruses are circulating in wastewater. And so, you know, with SARS-CoV-2 kind of coming into the picture, you know, the obvious question was that could we detect that in wastewater?
And what are you measuring? Are you measuring whether the active virus is there?
No, so we're measuring the genetic material, so it's RNA in the wastewater, so trying to find signatures if it's present or not, whether it's infectious or not.
And what were you doing in the lab before COVID-19?
So before that, I run a research group mainly studying evolution of viruses, so we were kind of, you know, normal work, but we had a project, which we still have, which was to just look at viruses in wastewater as it is. It was one of the projects of many projects that we have. But we do a lot of tracking of viruses in animals and other systems using fecal matter anyway. So this was kind of just almost like fitted well within our business as it is of research of fecal material.
And is the method that you use to test for COVID-19 the same method you use for all other viruses?
It's slightly different because here we're doing a very targeted approach where we're targeting only SARS-CoV-2 for detection. But our other projects, we're basically trying to identify viruses for which we have no prior knowledge of. So, you know, we don't have toolkits to directly detect them with specific signatures.
You mean completely new viruses?
Yes, that is correct.
Wow. I mean, that sounds kind of scary because we're led to believe that new viruses are thrown up constantly. How do you know whether to press the alarm on them or whether they're just kind of there and then going to go away?
So I think this is one of the biggest challenges we face is that we know very little about viruses in general. And all the viruses we do know about are based on our biased studies of viruses from a disease perspective. In a lot of instances, viruses are just mere passengers and systems. Even though they replicate in their host or infect things, they might not create a major pathology in those organisms. And yes, the viruses that we do identify, we do not know whether they will be, you know, highly pathogenic or not. So these are things that we're monitoring in environmental systems. So at least we have a catalog of them. So if something like SARS, like what the situation we have, does come across, then we know where it was first detected or et cetera. And because now we know the SARS-CoV-2, the last common ancestor, was detected in bats, which was sampled in China about 5-10 years ago. So, you know, we've got some sort of information built in there.
So, Simona, what's your particular expertise there in the lab?
So I am in the wet lab a lot, and I also, you know, do a lot of bioinformatics on the computer, so working with the data that we get out of the lab. I basically help Arvind run the lab and mentor students. And then on this particular project, I was involved in getting the samples when they came in. This was a collaborative project with local municipals from the different cities that we sampled and a team of engineers that are water engineers. And then also, like, once we processed all the samples, we did what's called sequencing of the genetics of the virus, and then I also worked on looking at the data.
If virus can be found in sewage, it presumably exists in all bodily fluids. And so why don't we just have a urine test or a fecal test rather than the other invasive swab to detect COVID in individuals?
That's a really, really good question. So first of all, there's actually been quite a few studies that have looked at different excretions from humans. We know that it is primarily an upper respiratory infection, and therefore the highest titer and probably the most earliest detection is going to be in saliva or nasopharyngeal swabs. Urine, unfortunately, does not often yield a lot of virus. We do see it in fecal and obviously other, you know, excretions that go into wastewater, such as vomiting. And so therefore, even though those would be, it would be great if we could test them because they'd be maybe slightly less invasive, unfortunately, they're not reliable on that kind of level. And we don't know at what stage of infection that you would also come up.
So you mean if you detect COVID-19 through a swab, you have fairly certain knowledge that it's going to, it's active, but in bodily fluids or sewage samples, it could be historic. Is that what you mean?
I'm more saying that the titer, so the level of viral infection, because viruses don't infect your whole entire body necessarily. They infect certain cell types. So you kind of want to go more to the source rather than to other excretions that won't necessarily have as high levels of the virus.
I see.
So therefore, in your urine, even though it might be there sometimes, it's not always going to be excreted in your urine, whereas you might have a really strong infection up in your upper respiratory system. And so it's more reliable to look at those types of samples.
I don't know which of you can answer this best, but how many strains of COVID-19 have you found in your wastewater testing?
So this becomes really complicated to try and look at the strain level things in wastewater, because think about it from this perspective. You've got an entire community that is contributing to that wastewater. So even though there are 10, 15, maybe 20 strains that are circulating in that population, that all gets dumped into that wastewater from those individuals. And then when we analyze the data, what ends up happening, we're taking we're finding all those different sequences in there. So to try and assign direct strains becomes very difficult because we do not know which part of the genomic sequence comes from which individual. And so what we can more do is we can say in this data that there are sequences that represent these groups or these strains, at least to some level, but we can't say exactly it is that particular strain that is in that wastewater.
Because you're analyzing viral RNA, so it's mashed up, as it were. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And we're looking at it as a population. So, you know, in an individual, you're getting that individual signature. And as soon as you go away from the individual and you go into an environmental system like wastewater, you're then having a collection of multiple individuals. So it's almost like, you know, you're widening the net a lot more. So you've just got a lot of variants that you're then shifting through in that data set. So it becomes slightly noisy, but it can give very good indicators in terms of what's moving in and out.
So what can it tell you that's useful on a daily basis?
So there's a few things that it can tell you. And one thing that I will say, that when we're looking at clinical samples, which obviously is extremely important for informing, you know, public health decisions.
By clinical samples, you mean the swabs?
Yes, exactly, right. The swabs. So from individual humans that are infected. So that's very important. But the one thing that you are potentially missing is that you're looking at purely, or you're biasing towards symptomatic individuals. And we know that a lot of people don't get symptoms or very little symptoms. And so by looking at the wastewater, you're actually encompassing all of those people that are infected as opposed to just the symptomatic individuals. So some of the things that we can look at, and even though we can't say a specific strain, we can look at we can say that we know that there is potentially a specific lineage. So an introduction of a lineage into a system is apparent within a wastewater sample. And we can also look across all of the genomes and all of the genetic material to see individual changes within that genome.
Even though the RNA is all meshed up?
Yes.
How do you do that?
So essentially, you're basically looking across the genome from every single individual. And so across that, you can look at each position across the genome, regardless of what genetic material or what the origin of the genetic material is, to look at individual changes. So you can look at population level changes of the virus.
So is this going to be of use as a kind of historical data trail, or is it of use right now?
So it is of use right now because it can start informing trends. So in systems where you want to try putting early warning systems, you know, what will happen is before, you know, we start seeing cases in clinical settings like hospitals, doctors pointing out these things and reporting them based on patients visiting their clinics. In the wastewater, we generally, you know, it has been shown that there is a lag period before the symptoms show and people go to the clinics or, you know, to any of the facilities. But if you're monitoring this on a regular basis, you can see the trends that are going to come through next. So if you see a spike in terms of the levels of these viral genetic elements in the wastewater, then you can kind of, if you're doing temporal sampling, so you're sampling over time, you might be able to then say that in about 7 to 10 days, you'll see a spike in the population going to the clinic in any of the clinical samples. So there is that lag period. The other unique thing that you can start seeing is because you're looking at particular signatures, you can see where the transient communities are. So let's say you go to a residential area and you keep sampling there. If that residential area is really well locked down or there is some sort of mandate in place to keep the community together and away from other people, then the viruses you're seeing or the sequences you're seeing in that wastewater should be very, very stable. So all the different variations, there should be very few variations or if any. But in kind of, say, business districts where, you know, people are coming in and out of different areas, you should see a lot of variations taking place because people from different parts are coming to contribute. So you can also look at stability of the community and movements indirectly based on some of this data.
So is there a danger of overreacting to a small presence of it in the sewage? For example, we were talking earlier, you were finding maybe other viruses that are at this stage not harmful, but you can't predict when they might become harmful. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is more a surveillance thing, and it's basically for at least to inform the healthcare and at least any of the city planners, the governors, or, you know, anyone, the mayors, in terms of how to try and come up with any kind of plans that need to be put in place. Now, just because it's detected in the wastewater doesn't necessarily mean that it is going to be in this large portion within the community. And how big the spread is. And again, finding viruses which we know nothing about prior to them becoming infectious in humans, it at least at the moment, it is more along the lines of surveillance. So at least cataloging and knowing what's there. So if something does emerge, we can go back very quickly and develop tools very quickly based on some prior knowledge.
Where are you getting your samples from? Is it US-wide?
So we actually have samples from 10 states across the US, and then we've done more intensive sampling within two specific regions, one being right here where we are in Tempe, Arizona. And so it was kind of looking at two different scales. So we're looking at, you know, is there any differences temporally and then also spatially. So within a two-month period, we heavily sampled within Tempe, Arizona. And that's kind of leading on from the question that you asked before, is also looking at trends is really important so that you don't overreact. Because if you can see differences over time, those are the things you should be really paying attention to. And so that's why these kind of these pilot studies are important, so that we have baseline data and we can build on that to see, like, when is there a change? So within wastewater, some studies have shown that actually you can see, like, up to 7 days before a spike in the actual human population, and then also hospitalizations. So those kind of trends are things that we should start looking for.
Yeah. So do the results of samples that you're taking from these 10 states around the country, Do they reflect the incidence of COVID through clinical tests in the population?
So we can't say specifically whether it's incidence, but we can say that there was a reflection of a change in terms of over time. So if you have a spike in cases, there certainly was a change in the diversity of the population of virus that we found in a wastewater. So there certainly was correlations there. Also, in terms of lineages of viruses, so like particular variations in the population, there was also a really strong trend there. And we were able to see many, many lineages that were circulating within the US populations. In addition to, we also found ones that have not yet been detected in clinical data. And I think that those are really important because those are potentially the information that we're missing from the clinical data.
Right. So it's an early warning tool for public health risk, but it will never replace clinical testing.
No, it's certainly not going to replace it. Clinical testing is very important. However, it really does give additional information. And also, because you're taking one sample and it's essentially sampling the whole population within that collection area, you're really getting a different level of information. And also, like, in terms of logistics and in terms of money, it's much easier and much quicker to be able to look at a wastewater sample to give you that kind of initial look across the population.
Is there any country in the world that has successfully apprehended an illness or contained an illness through the analysis of wastewater?
Not really. So there's only one place that I can think that there has been a case that was pretty unique, and that was in Israel, where they found poliovirus in the wastewater. And so it had kind of, you know, gone past the surveillance in clinical samples, and they found it in wastewater, and then that raised alarm bells. So that was an early warning system. But other than that, you know, this is kind of, all this is in its infancy in a way, because again, a lot of this material nobody knew could be used with and had so was so rich in information. And you know, we were fortunate that the team that's been collecting a lot of the wastewater samples, they're water engineers, and they'd already got this pipeline ready for sampling for things they were looking at in the past, which was mainly opioids in these wastewater samples.
And was that revealing?
Yeah, so they could, in their data sets earlier on, they've actually done some really good work where they've shown where the hotspots of opioid use in different parts of the city are or different regions are.
And are you two going to stay in Arizona for the foreseeable future, or are you going to come back home?
I would say for now, certainly. I mean, obviously, with coronavirus, things are different, you know, around the world. I'm definitely very envious of New Zealand living a normal life. But I would say for the foreseeable future, you know, we've got some really amazing projects going on, and we're going to see them through.
Yeah, so it all depends. I'll be back home on my way to the Antarctic. But
what are you going to the Antarctic for, Avant?
To go see the penguins.
Oh, okay. That seems...
And I work with the penguins in the Antarctic, so I kind of come through New Zealand for that.
You work with the penguins in the Antarctic doing what?
So I'm part of a team that is monitoring breeding success and behavior, foraging behavior of the animals there. And then I do a little bit of disease work on the penguins while I'm down there.
Which penguins?
The Adélie penguins.
We were talking about those last week. I'm sorry, I picked up... You can tell I'm more interested in penguins than sewage.
I don't blame you. Everyone loves penguins.
I know. Everybody loves penguins. But as we were saying last week, they do have some unpleasant habits.
Oh, they do. But they're very comical creatures.
Very nice to talk to both of you. Thank you. Arvind Varsany and Simona Kraberger, who are both working at Arizona State University. Arvind runs a research lab there, testing wastewater or sewage, as it's less politely described.